We are going to continue looking at Mark chapter 5. We have not quite finished the story of the demoniac at the beginning of Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. We have looked at all these. I had one last question, but we ran out of time last week on that particular thing. And that question, I think Dan had had his hand up, but we'll see if he'd like to share if he remembers what he thought of last week. So the question is, throughout Mark, we've read about so many of these people being being told not to tell people about what they've been doing, about what Jesus has done for them. Why would Jesus tell this man to tell everyone what happened in verse 19 when he told the former leper to keep quiet in Mark chapter 1, verses 43 and 44? He told the demons in several places to keep quiet, to shut them up. And even Jairus, later in this chapter, we see later in this chapter in verse 43, that he was told, don't tell anybody about this. So this man, he was healed. He has been afflicted for so long from this demon that has been possessing him. And so he is now healed and taken care of. The demon has been cast out. He's grateful. He's so thankful to the Lord for healing him, for taking care of him. But then Jesus tells him not to... Oh, you want to go ahead? Jesus tells him to... he wants to go with Jesus, but Jesus says, no, you need to tell people. So what you got, Dan?
You had mentioned something last week that I had not considered yet. That region that he was going to was a region of Gentiles, mm-hmm. not Jews. So for one thing, but it sort of fits into my theory, this would be a new disciple who he can send off to a remote area, and it wouldn't necessarily impact his work in Galilee around the Jews at all, because they wouldn't be hearing him being spoken about.
All right. So a little earlier in Mark chapter 3, we read that people from the other side of the Jordan had come to see Jesus and to learn from him. People from all over the place, we see all over that area, but also from the other side of the Jordan, which might include Decapolis, where he's at, as we see here in verse 20, that they are in Decapolis. So we see that this is, again, a Gentile region. That's why they've got a bunch of pigs that they are taking care of. That's not going to be a Jewish region at all, where people are going to be taking care of pigs like that. So he is coming to perhaps recruit a disciple and have more disciples. So other people in Decapolis likely do already know about Jesus, but it's not nearly as widespread as it was in the Jewish regions. At the same time, the Gentiles didn't know what to expect from the Messiah, from someone like this. So none of them would have plans to kill Jesus. We see at the end, Mark chapter 3, around verse 6 or so, that the Herodians and the Pharisees were planning to kill Jesus, right? And so the Gentiles would not have that kind of desire to do this at all. So Jesus wouldn't be in their area long enough either to be swarmed by them. We looked at the different reasons throughout Mark's class to understand why he would tell them these things. But he did want his message to be carried into regions that even he wouldn't venture far into. Well, what's one of the things, and I don't remember the exact passage, but Jesus states that he was sent to whom? The lost children of Israel, right? That his ministry, for the most part, he did go into some Gentile regions, but his ministry, for the most part, was to the Jews, right? Now, that doesn't mean he didn't die for all men, because that does happen later. The Gentiles were added in Acts chapter 10. So that would be us. We're added in Acts chapter 10. So we are looking at this, and we are seeing that he is wanting his message to be spread to the Gentiles, because in anticipation for the Gentiles being added to his church. Does that make sense? All right, great. And then in verse 20, all marveled at what this man proclaimed, at what this man who had been healed of leprosy, of what had happened to him. And that word proclaimed. Sorry?
Demon possession?
Yes.
You said leprosy.
Did I say leprosy? All right. So,
one's
yes.
Just as bad as the other, right?
Well, I don't know. They're both pretty bad. Yes, he was healed of the demon possession, and they marvel at what he had preached. Well, it said proclaimed there in that passage, but that's the Greek word that we use for preach, keruso. All right? So that is what's going on there. All right, now we're going to look at the next two miracles here. The miracle of Jairus, his daughter being brought back to life, and also a woman whose flow of blood was healed. So, one of the things that Mark likes to do sometimes is he likes to sandwich certain stories inside of other stories. And so what we see at the beginning of this is Jairus comes to find Jesus so that he could have him heal his daughter, because she hasn't died yet. She is still living but very sick. And then this other woman comes up who has this flow of blood. So what we're going to do is we're going to divide this up by miracle. The first miracle that happens is the woman with the flow of blood, and then the raising of Jairus' daughter. And we'll talk about these things. One of the interesting things about this chapter is that it deals with many things that are ceremonially unclean. We've had our classes on Leviticus on Sunday evenings, and we are more familiar now with some of those unclean things that are talked about, these ceremonial unclean things. The demon-possessed man had an unclean spirit and was living among the dead in the tombs, and dead bodies were considered unclean. This woman that we're about to talk about had an issue of blood, had a flow of blood, and was therefore ceremonially unclean. That's in Leviticus chapter 15. We see that in verse 25 and following. At the same time, Jairus' daughter had died. We don't know what her sickness was, but she had died, and again, was ceremonially unclean. We've already discussed that Jesus blatantly touched a leper who had not been ceremonially cleansed yet. He had been healed, or maybe at about the same time had been healed, but had not been ceremonially cleansed yet, had not gone to the temple and made the sacrifices and gone through the whole ritual. At this time. But this chapter also zeroes in on that same issue. This whole chapter deals with all sorts of things that are ceremonially unclean. Later, in Mark chapter 7, we see what Jesus says that really defiles a man. In Mark chapter 7, verses 20 through 23. And we'll definitely cover that. Usually, if we want to summarize that, things that are sinful, truly sinful, defile a man, come out of a man. So that's what we see here. And so he is practicing that already. All right. First, we note that Jesus had listened to the requests of those in Decapolis in verse 20, and he had left them, and then he returns across the Sea of Galilee. Turns across the Sea of Galilee. Do I have that? I might not have that. Not a big deal. We got, you know what the Sea of Galilee looks like. We've seen maps of it already. And so the Sea of Galilee, he is on the side of, very likely on the southeastern side, and he's going back across. He's likely going back to Capernaum, which is his headquarters, or he's going to go possibly somewhere else. It doesn't say specifically where, so we don't have to, we can speculate, but it's not a huge deal. There's also a fairly large town on the eastern side called Tiberias. So he could have gone there. And there are some other places that are possibilities. If he went back to Capernaum, then that would mean Jairus. We note that Jairus is, it says, well, let's go ahead and read this since I'm already kind of reading ahead. Let's go to verses 21 through 34. If somebody has that, please read.
And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus, and came up behind him in the crowd, and touched his garment, for she said, If I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, Who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, Who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease.
All right. Thank you. All right. So Jairus. Who is Jairus? What does it say? What do we read in verse 22? Who is Jairus?
Ruler of the synagogue.
He's the ruler of the synagogue. The ruler of the synagogue is not a religious role. He's not over the priests or anything of that nature. He's not actually ruling in a sense, like an eldership perhaps or anything like that. He is ruling in the sense that he's an administrative, in an administrative role. Perhaps even a custodial role. He's making sure that everything is orderly and situated in the proper way, making sure that basically cleaning the building, taking care of things, making sure it's all taken care of so that people can come and be ready to worship. So that is his role as the ruler of the synagogue. This was still a very prominent and well-known person in the area. Jairus is a ruler of the synagogue. Everybody knows him. Everybody likes him, presumably. And they are, he's a very top man, and that's one of the reasons, very likely, why he is actually named. We see a lot of these people that have been healed so far, and so far only the demon has been named here in Mark chapter 5. So we see that he is actually named, so he's probably very prominent in the area, and people can go and ask him later, Hey, Jairus, did this really happen? So this is another evidence of an eyewitness account. Now, the other accounts mention this as well, but mention his name, but that's a very good thing so that people can ask about this. All right. Again, this may or may not be the same synagogue that we read about in Mark chapter 1, Mark chapter 3. I remember in Mark chapter 1, another demon was cast out right there in the middle of worship. And so that's another situation. Jairus may have been there, may have witnessed this, if Jairus was in Capernaum. At the same time, he also may have seen Jesus healing the withered hand, the man with the withered hand at the beginning of Mark chapter 3. And remember, at the beginning of Mark chapter 3, they are They are the Pharisees and the Herodians. That's when they get together and decide, hey, we're going to band together to kill Jesus. Or to plot to kill Jesus. So that was that situation there. All right, whatever the case, Jairus had heard of, perhaps even witnessed, the power of Jesus. And then he came to him when he needed Jesus the most. He came to Jesus and fell at his feet, it says. Matthew says in Matthew chapter 9, verse 18, that he worshipped Jesus. This is, again, that same word that we saw earlier in Mark chapter 5, that proskuneo word. He bowed down, he fell down to honor Jesus. And then he was asking him humbly to help him. We note he had a 12-year-old girl. Now, it doesn't say that in the passage we read. It says that a little bit later in Mark chapter 5, verse 42. She was 12 years old. In Luke chapter 8, verse 42, it states that this is his only daughter, his only girl, perhaps, based on how you read the Greek, his only child. And so, I mean, you have an only child who's sick to the point of death. I mean, any child, really, you would want to have healed. But an only child is even that much more urgent. Pardon?
All of your attention goes there.
That's exactly right. All of your attention goes there. So, Jesus went with Jairus to see his daughter. We know that the crowd was thick and difficult to get through. It says that they were thronging him. They're all over the place. One could imagine the anxiety that Jairus has at this point. I mean, you see all this crowd of people. Can you imagine what this father is going through right now? We've got to get to... Now, he doesn't know that Jesus has the ability to raise people from the dead. All he knows is that Jesus can heal people. And so he is... I'd imagine, you know, if I were Jairus, I'd be very frustrated. Let us through. Wouldn't you be? Very, just so anxious about this whole situation. Please, let my daughter live. I need Jesus to come help with this. And the crowd is preventing them. The crowd wants to see Jesus, wants to touch Jesus, wants to do all sorts of things, and they're preventing him from doing so. And then Jesus stops in the middle of the crowd. Who touched me? Who touched me? You're stopping? Jesus, let's go! Let's go! My daughter's dying. I just think that if I were Jairus, his anxiety must be through the roof. He didn't know that he could raise people from the dead. Then we look at the woman with the flow of blood. It says that she had this issue of blood for 12 years. And then we know that the little girl is 12 years old as well. I don't know if there's a connection there, but I thought it was interesting to point out that both of these situations have an issue of 12 years, an issue of blood for 12 years, and the little girl is 12 years. I don't know. That's for you to dwell about, think about. We know that she had spent all of her money on doctors, and they actually, according to Mark here, actually made her worse. You know, we think about some of the medical procedures that we know about from history and things of that nature, and we note that many of them would make them worse. I don't know about the medical procedures of the first century, but I do know that, you know, very often, you know, George Washington, right, famously died because he had an issue, and his he had leeches all over the place. And if he hadn't had the leeches, he might have lived a little bit longer. So that actually made him worse. Now, I don't know if that is the case here. I don't think they used leeches in the first century. But it's one of those things that you have to consider. Sometimes medical procedures of the past made them worse. And that's true today sometimes, too. Sometimes someone has a medical procedure and it makes them worse because they haven't quite identified what the problem is, or maybe sometimes you've heard the phrase, sometimes the cure is worse than the disease. And so sometimes that's a problem as well. The law, Leviticus chapter 15, the law explicitly states that she is unclean. And anything she sits on or lies on was also unclean. Also, anyone who touches such a seat or a bed was also unclean. We also see that they were to wash their clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening, the people who touched these things. Being unclean meant that she could not enter into the temple to worship. She was forbidden from going to worship because of this issue of blood. But she had much faith. If she could only touch Jesus' clothes. You know, in other versions, in Matthew and Luke, it says, if she could only touch the hem of his garment, only touch the border of his garment, then she could be healed. But she was still unclean. Therefore, if she's unclean in that crowd and the crowd is thronging Jesus, what do you suppose she's doing with her uncleanness? She's spreading that to everybody else. Right, everybody else in that crowd is ceremonially unclean now, at least until evening. They got to wash and take care of all that. So she's also risking, by touching his garment, risking making Jesus ceremonially unclean too. Now remember, in our Leviticus studies, being unclean isn't necessarily a good or bad thing. It is simply a state of being. Now, one could be unclean due to something sinful. One could be unclean because of something medical that happened to them, something that they can't necessarily control. But regardless, those kinds of things would prevent them from going into worship. And so that, and sometimes, depending on the severity of the uncleanness, especially with leprosy, they had to be outside of the camp, outside of the city during that time. While they were undergoing these diseases and things. So, she's risking all of this at this time. Then the woman is healed. She touches Jesus' clothes and she's healed. How quickly is she healed?
Immediately.
Immediately. She feels within herself that she has, that the flow of blood is stopped, that she is better, that she feels better. And that's a remarkable thing. You know, I didn't mean to comment on this, but, you know, I've seen, you know, social media is all abuzz with all this coronavirus stuff. And one of the things a lot of people have noticed is, or have pointed out, was that this one church that believes in faith healings has canceled the faith healing service amid the coronavirus emergency.
That's ironic.
but that's what you would expect if they were charlatans, if they weren't, if they're trying to fool people into what they are doing. At the same time, I noticed one of the televangelists, Kenneth Copeland, perhaps you've heard of him, was trying to heal people through the TV screen. Now, can you imagine if he actually tried to go and see somebody with coronavirus and try to heal them by actually touching them? Do you think he would do that?
No.
I'd be surprised if he did. I'd be very surprised if he did. Yes?
There was, I can't remember the exact facts, but there was a debate many years ago where a Church of Christ preacher was debating against one of these healers who believed that you couldn't be, you know, if you had faith in God, you couldn't be poisoned by a snake and stuff like that.
Yeah, snake handler.
Yeah. Kind of like what we saw in Acts 24 or something like that when Paul was bitten. But anyway,
28.
The Church of Christ preacher or debater brought a case with him. You know the story?
Yeah.
In the case was a rather poisonous snake, I think a rattlesnake or something like that. And the other guy, upon invitation to handling the snake, declined and moved further away.
Yeah.
He made some social space.
Yeah. Social distancing.
Social distancing.
You know, a lot of these snake handlers and so-called faith healers are trying to fool you for money. And so we need to beware of all of them and make sure that we're not snookered by any of that. So she was healed immediately. Healed immediately. And Jesus sensed this and turns around and says, "Who touched my clothes?" Why would he ask that question? I mean, he's omniscient, right? He's God, right? Wouldn't he already know?
To see if anybody would admit.
Ah, that's it. You know, there are a lot of reasons why people ask questions. We know in the Garden of Eden that when the Lord comes into the garden after they had eaten of the fruit, that the Lord had asked Adam, Eve, "Where are you? Where have you gone?" Now, that's not a question because he didn't know. There are lots of reasons to ask questions, and only one of those reasons is to get information. Some of those is so that people can admit to what they've done, so that they can, you know, have you ever asked your child, if you've got children, ask your child if they've done something wrong, just to see if they would tell you the truth? You know what the truth is, but you want to make sure that they know that they admit to it, because honesty will be rewarded, right? Ideally. And if they've lied to you, then their punishment's worse. At least that's how it should be. So that is the, you ask your kids this, and that is what the Lord sometimes asks of us. He doesn't ask to gain information. He asks so that we will answer him.
He was verbalizing the incident. Otherwise, nobody would have known about it but him and her.
That's right. Yeah. And so that's another way of doing that. Call attention to it so that people will know what has happened. That's a good point. Thank you. All right. She was fearing and trembling, it says. Why? Why was she so scared?
Well, she had faith that he could heal. She also would recognize he had other powers. And did she do the right thing by touching him? Because if she is unclean, now he's unclean. There could be all sorts of retribution.
So I've got a couple possibilities. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
And she knew she wasn't supposed to be in the midst of what was going on. Oh, she was unclean.
Yeah. So I do have a couple possibilities here, and those are among them. That's my second possibility. The first one is Jesus famous by this point?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Are you kind of nervous around famous people? I mean, have you ever been around a famous person? I guess that's one thing. I've not been around super famous people, but people who are locally famous, people that I, the guy who does Hootie and the Blowfish.
Darius Rucker.
I've met him before. And boy, I was nervous. And he's not even my favorite band and whatnot. But I enjoy his music, and I was kind of nervous around him. So have you ever been around somebody like that and you were just kind of nervous? Well, I'd imagine this woman is very nervous about this. And that's one reason for this. She knows that this is Jesus, about all the things that he can do. She might not know exactly who he is, being the Son of God, but she knows at the very least that he's a prophet, that he is a man of God. And so that could lend to some bit of nervousness there. The second reason, very good to point that out, she is unclean as a result of her flow of blood. And she is now likely made him unclean as a result of what she did. And not only that, but the crowd of people around her. So, after all, she did just tell him of her flow of blood and as a result, her uncleanness. So, now, the question, we talked about this with the leper in Mark chapter 1. Is Jesus now unclean?
I'd say not.
As we discussed with Mark 1 with the leper, the power had gone out of him to heal the other person. Jesus might have bathed, because we see in the story he's in the very next verse, he heads to Jairus' house, goes inside the house, and things of that nature, and touches people. He might have bathed and washed his clothes, but it doesn't say. It's possible he waited until evening to see Jairus' daughter, but there's no indication of that in the text. Whatever the case, Jairus witnessed all of this. He witnessed the woman with the flow of blood. He witnessed her being healed and touching. Well, might not have witnessed the touching, but have known that she touched him. And noticed all these things. He's the ruler of the synagogue. He knows what makes someone unclean and what doesn't. But he allows Jesus into his home anyway. Doesn't seem to care about it. So we note that I think that it's very likely that Jesus was not unclean because he was the Son of God, because he had the power, essentially pushed that uncleanness out of him and cleansed the woman as a result of his ability, result of his power. And at the same time, we note that as well in the healing of the leper. So there are so many things that go into this here. We'll note he does something unclean in a minute as well. Perhaps we'll talk about that next week. We're low on time. All right. Jesus then reveals that it was her faith that saved her, or that her faith, rather, that made her well, and that she should be at peace and not worry about whatever uncleanness that is going about. Maybe she still has to. In Leviticus 15, we know that that if one is healed of the flow of blood like that, they had to wait 7 days, and then on the eighth day, they would offer a sacrifice of 2 turtle doves or pigeons. And so maybe she had to do that, maybe she didn't. If I were her, I probably would, to be on the safe side. but he says, go in peace. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of this. Everything is okay. She feared, but she didn't let that fear stop her because her faith was strong. You know, it's one of the themes that we see here at the end of chapter 4 and in chapter 5 as well, the idea of fear. The idea of fear. You know, the people in the boat, the disciples in the boat, they were afraid, weren't they? They were afraid when the storm came and water started filling into the boat. They were afraid, but Jesus says, where is your faith? Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? There's that contrast between fear and faith. We'll talk about a little bit about that in the sermon this morning. She had to undergo this situation here, and she had this atoning sacrifice that she was supposed to do, this purification and atoning sacrifices. We got a few minutes left, and I don't think we can do the next story justice in that amount of time. But, you know, with this whole idea of uncleanness, there's just so much that we read about in Leviticus about that. And I know many of you are come to the Sunday evening services, and of course we've canceled it today because of the virus thing, but we have to recognize that fear is overcome by faith. You know, there's a in one of the evangelistic seminars that I've been to, they use let's see if I can remember it now. No, can't remember. There's an acronym for fear, F-E-A-R, and basically states that you're afraid without evidence. That you're afraid without a reason. Fear without a reason. Because a lot of times, there are things to be afraid of in this world, surely. But there's some things that we don't have to be afraid of. Oh, what's the worst that could happen? For instance, one of the things that one of my teachers in high school said was, what's the worst that could happen if you ask a question? Well, the worst that could happen is, is the teacher or whoever says no. That's the worst that could happen. That's not a reason not to ask. So we have to weigh those things sometimes and determine what is the what reason we might have for being afraid. And our faith ought to overcome that. Now, many of us are afraid of the virus that's out right now. And there's good reason to be. There's good reason to be. And we're all taking precautions to take care of that. So let us continue to take those precautions so that we are not affected by that. We don't pass that on to others, especially those who are older or compromised. Their immune system is compromised in some way. Because we don't want to do that. We want to be responsible. Make sure that we're not passing that along to anybody or contracting it ourselves. Any last minute thoughts or questions? All right, very good. We will stop for now, and then we'll have our worship in a few minutes.